Hello and welcome back to the Breathing Deeply Yoga Therapy and Meditation Podcast with Brant Pasalakwa, founder of the Breathing Deeply Yoga Therapy and Meditation School. In this podcast, we answer our students' questions and share information about yoga therapy and meditation with the intention of creating a new paradigm in wellness. Thank you so much for being here. Now let's dive into the show. Today's episode is a recording taken directly from a live Q&A session with Breathing Deeply founder Brant Pasalakwa and students of our Yoga Therapy Foundations program. Our first question is, do you have tips for memorizing the muscles for yoga anatomy?
So a couple of things. One is the most important thing is actually more that you understand where they are and what they're doing. So less important is that you know it's the teres minor. No client's going to come in and be like, oh, my teres minor. It like never happens, right?
Yeah.
So that's just one thing, just for your own, you know, understanding that there are, you know, like almost like being able to picture where things are, why when they contract, it would move your femur, like for hip flexion, like why do the quadriceps or the psoas do that? These are the most important things. But I've done a lot of school, including this kind of school and also medical massage school. And I had to know every single muscle in the body, literally, which was super hard. A lot of them. And a lot of them you can't even feel. So, you know, it's like, one thing is that like people are usually, well, there's like kind of three kinds of learners, right? There's audio, like, if you say it, you'll remember it. And there's looking at it and there's like feeling it. But unfortunately, the feeling it is a little bit harder. And a lot of yoga teachers are that type of learner, you know? But so what works for a lot of people is actually doing the motion. If you say it while you do the motion, then it might drop into your brain. So if you're just trying to memorize it, I would say like maybe play with the different, like you either move and say it, you just say it and sort of visualize it, or you stare at the book. But if you're staring at flashcards, that never worked for me either. Like staring at flashcards, I just stare at the flashcard. And then when the flashcard's gone, so is the information. So forcing yourself to, even if you look at it and then put it away and then say it to yourself while you move, it's gonna force your brain to think about it. All that said, I really think the most important thing is like if you sit with like the structure yoga therapy book, for instance,
yeah,
and you kind of puzzle out like why, it doesn't matter what the muscle is, but you know what I mean? Why the deltoid is helping the arm lift or whatever. That's the information you actually want. Having done that, when you're actually a yoga therapist and working, you'd be surprised, like the information's in there. So even though even if you're not like really good at memorizing everything, when someone says, I tore my supraspinatus, if you do all this, you're going to know it's in the shoulder and you're going to know that that is a muscle. And like, you're not going to look at them and go, what's a supraspinatus, which would be the worst thing you could do, right? Like that would be the embarrassing moment where you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about because that's not good for business. Like people won't have a lot of confidence in you. But in reality, I mean, there's lots of things I've forgotten, but I've done it a long time, so I know a lot of things. But like, I remember being in my office and being like, hold on a minute, and pulling out an anatomy atlas or putting out, like I would look things up all the time because I would forget stuff. And that's not that big a deal. So on one hand, try to memorize them. On the other hand, really try to understand what they're doing. And it's really the attachment and the insertion, right? Like where they attach. So you understand that there's like, you know, oh, it's attaching to this big bone and this bone, and that's why it helps lift my arm. Those pieces of information are the most important. But it is worth your time because, you know, all the time I get things like, oh, I have a shoulder problem, I have a torn rotator cuff, and I email them back. And I say, did you get an MRI? They say, yeah, I give you a report. And then I see which muscle is torn. And so that's all going to be in there. You're not going to be like, oh, I have no idea what's happening. Right? Like, I'm interested. Okay, that muscle's torn. So What did that muscle do? What actions is it involved in? Can you look it up quickly because you did this process? So some of it's like the speed at which you can get the information. So it's great if you memorize everything, that makes you faster. And sort of second to that is you've studied it at least once, like now, so that when you look it up, it's in there somewhere, you know.
What are the different energetic effects of breathing up on the inhale, down on the exhale, and down on the inhale and up on the exhale during spine breath?
You know, it depends who you ask. So I've done both with different teachers for all sorts of things. Taoist breathing like goes up and down. Like there's a million ways to visualize it. So, I mean, I can tell you my own experience, but I don't know if that's particularly relevant. The reason I do it down is because it's following the diaphragms of the pelvic floor and the breathing diaphragm. Both definitely happen all the time in all sorts of traditions. If you have someone that's done a lot of this, I wouldn't retrain them unless I had a reason. Really, you're getting in touch with the central channel and the shishumna, and as long as that's happening, it's fine. And I would, if she spent all this time doing it, it's going to be really hard. I can actually do it, but one of the reasons I can go back and forth is because I do these like Taoist breathing techniques where you breathe up, but you're sort of going up more like the back of your body. And then when you breathe down, you're kind of visualizing it down towards your dantian. It's like your sort of like your navel center, but below it. So it's like you're sort of going up your back and down your front. So it has a more circular kind of thing. So it feels very different than the way I teach that spine breath, which is like straight up and down, kind of the middle. So my brain will easily do that. Another reason why you might retrain someone, sometimes people have like big experiences when they switch their breathing patterns. So as a yoga therapist, not breathing patterns, but like the way they do anything. So as a yoga therapist, you know, most of the time people are coming to me and things aren't going well, or they want something to be different. Sometimes I would shift it because it's different. That's the reason. That my personal experience is the way I teach it is much more grounding. And the reason, if you're doing it for vata balancing, because you're moving your mind with your pelvic diaphragm. So you're encouraging that vata balance right at the root of your body. And so when you're breathing up, you're not kind of connected to that anymore mentally, which is fine. I mean, there's lots of ways to do things. But if that's the reason, then yeah, I think sort of getting it a little more physical, because all that like upward mental momentum might be vata imbalancing. So we're moving your mind with your diaphragms, you know, your pelvic floor naturally moves in this way, you know, down on the inhale and up on the exhale subtly. And you're sort of entraining your whole system to this like sort of natural movement, which might be more grounding. Everything in yoga therapy is like, what is it doing for you? You know, it's not like this one's better or this one is the right way. Just make sure she understands that. It's like as a energetic practice or a pranayama or a spiritual practice or a meditative practice, it's totally okay. But the thing is, you've got a vata imbalanced person that's doing a breathing practice all the time, and they're still very vata imbalanced. So that's how you think. Mm-hmm. And that's how you talk to her. You don't have to use the word vata, but you're basically like, well, this is what you do every day. And now you're talking to me about your anxiety. These things aren't, you know, doing the job. So, you know, we'll do something else. The thing is, though, like you're working on different levels. So the reason it lands so well in class is because you're like kind of erring towards the physical. And so that's always a good idea in a general asana class, right? Because more people will get it. Mm-hmm. As you start getting into energetics and how people feel, you know, a lot of people feel this kind of lightness from inhaling up. They feel this like energetic movement. And so that can be really powerful too.
Yeah.
But now you're not going with the body in the same way. So it's, you know, it's really like what you're trying to land on. That's why the Tao is like, you know, in those practices, they're all about that energetic movement. So that's what they want you to feel. They don't care about your, I mean, not that they don't care, but like, I mean, they're not focused on your pelvic floor or massaging your heart. It's like a totally different thing. And even like the Taoist thing is really interesting because it's like they have you going up and back down, which is very grounding to go back down. And so a lot of that breathing up yoga stuff, like it's all about sort of moving up the chakras and blowing the energy at the top of your head, not the most grounding thing. if you hang around spiritual communities where they do tons of those practices, it reflects in the people. So they become really, really kind of like, well, my experience, everyone's different, but the general feel of it is you see large groups of people and they're like really not very grounded, but very open, right? Because that's what the practice is doing. It's like that focusing. So they become like, it's like they're really sensitive and really open, and less useful probably, you know, in like day-to-day activities, which is fine because they're living in an ashram and they don't need to be, you know. But like you can imagine somebody, you know, with three kids and is a nurse, that might be a little difficult way to live, doing these breathing practices that make them feel like, unless they're like on retreat or, you know, have other grounding practices. So these are all the things one thinks about.
How do the three doshas express themselves when balanced and imbalanced in the Anandamaya Kosha?
So the doshas are like signs and symptoms. And we can totally go down that rabbit hole, and it is one way to think. But generally, just to kind of orient us, generally when you get into the two inner koshas, you're mostly thinking about them just being imbalanced in general. So you're thinking more in like a koshic framework. You can do this. And of course I have, just the same way you got there, you're like doshas and koshas, doshas and koshas. And you do see things. And I tend, in terms of work, in terms of techniques, I tend to start thinking more like koshically. So this person is, doesn't really have like a sense of purpose because there's nothing being generated from their sort of like soul's mission. Like they're not getting that information. Right. And that gets really subtle for people because it's like, is it the Anandamaya Kosha or is it the Vijnanamaya Kosha blocking your ability to get there, or both? You know, you're going to use like this like machine gun approach to all ailments,
right.
basically, because you're like dropping down through all the koshas.
Yeah.
And it's a very powerful tool, you know. It's guided. Doesn't always work. I actually just did a like sort of longish eye rest yoga nidra this morning, which I haven't done in a very long time. I try to like refresh my knowledge. I like teach stuff, and then like if I haven't done it right, there's so many practices. But I did with Richard Miller, who like is the eye rest guy. And yeah, it was lovely because, you know, for me, all practice is lovely at this point. But it's very cognitive and there's a lot of talking. And I still felt great and like, you know, the experience was good. But there's no way I'm dropping into those inner koshas with that practice. It's not happening because I can't feel or hear anything because somebody's talking to me the entire time. So it's just like interrupty as I float down, you know? So why am I saying that? I'm saying that because there's a lot of different yoga nidras, right? And how much space you leave at different times. So one person would probably, you know, and maybe myself, like, I don't know, 8 years ago would have done it and had a completely different experience. But right now, you know, I'm like, he's like, you're just being. I'm like, okay, I'm just being. And he's like, you're just being. And I'm like, well, you just said that. I was trying to just be, but now you just keep whispering in my ear, I'm just being, which probably works really well for some people because it's like auto-suggestion and you're sort of hypnotizing yourself into some sort of deeper experience. And then for other people, it might be distracting. So kind of depends on the yoga nidra. So I don't know if it's yoga nidra itself, because you could do that with lots of meditations, right? Kind of drop in. Same way, like another example would be like a metta meditation can be like really amazing and heart opening, or it's like super cognitive. And you'll get like, you do it for a room and some people are like, wow, you know, heart opening bliss states from this experience. And other people are like, I don't know if I can forgive my mother. You know, they're just like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they got from it. They're like, no, not, you know, it's just like it's not dropping them into anything. They're just thinking about stuff. So it's not like accomplishing its goal. It's oversimplification, but I think they're all like that. Anyway, that wasn't really your question, but I don't know if like, you know, Vata people express things in certain ways, Vata imbalance people, Pitta people express things in certain ways. But theoretically at the Ananda level, we're all the same in that this is really your connection to nature and the universe. So, it's your individual expression of that. So it's going to look slightly different, but like it's that connectedness and being able to have a felt sense of it is the goal.
How do we use the chakra system with the Manomaya Kosha and in yoga therapy?
So here's the thing. All practices move across all koshas, including taking a walk. Like all practices, like we're people, we're not, these koshas are like a representation, but it's not like really what's happening. Does that make sense? Like, because, you can have deep bliss experiences swimming, right? So you wouldn't say like swimming is just a physical activity. Chakra thing is the same. So, but what our job is to see where it's going to have its most bang for the buck. So I'm not arguing that if you go, so like the Kripalu program is based on all the Pages work. They're not there anymore, but like it was this couple and it's all chakras all the time. And, if you're talking to them, they'd be like, what is this guy talking about? It's a monomer. Like they would be like, that doesn't even make sense. It's this, like what you're saying, it's this whole beautiful, complete system. But I'm sort of asking you to consider as a yoga therapist, not as a spiritual teacher, but as a yoga therapist, where is this kind of thing going to fit? And you might notice I'm only teaching that complete chakra bhadana meditation. I'm not teaching the chakra. We don't study the chakra system. I'm saying, if you think about this technique, walking up your shushumna, stopping in different places, thinking about sounds and shapes, that in particular is going to land in a place that's going to be very beneficial for the mind, for the conscious mind, for a lot of people. Doesn't mean it doesn't have any other effects. I'm not arguing that or that it's not energetic or anything like that. I'm just saying my opinion. Right, based on working with people, is that if you were gonna teach this, this is where you would teach it in a yoga therapy context. And there's something built in there. I don't think that the other things you can do with chakras are the fastest and most efficient way to do those things. I don't believe that learning the chakra system and working with it is the, I in no way think that that is the most efficient, most useful way towards, let's say, mental health. Most people, I'm not saying not for anyone, but for most people, versus just some straight up chanting, versus understanding certain concepts, versus highly regulating your breath so that it's, you're doing Alangana breathing where it's outward. So this is what like we're comparing everything to. That's how that got there. But just so you understand, it's not a comment on the chakra system at all. But the chakra people in that program, for instance, would say you're having a lot of clinging emotions. I don't know if they say this exactly, but I'll take this as a paraphrase. So you're gonna say this sound and this color and put yourself in your heart space over and over again. And that's going to clear it up. So what I'm sort of sharing in this program is I've tried a lot of things over a long period of time and talked to a lot of people. It's just when you're a teacher, right? It's just an experience thing you're sharing. That's probably not going to work. So I'm going to save you the time, because the chakra people are going to say this is going to work. And I see zero clinical evidence that that is true. So it's like they want it to work, right? Often those opinions are coming from a spiritual tradition where you use these things. And then also, I have a class of 30, 40, 50 yoga therapists. Like if we were all in live, maybe this might help just to consider for everybody. I could take you guys through any sets of practices, right? And if we're at the retreat center where we used to go, it's really beautiful and we'd be in this like little bubble and you're all yoga teachers and it's going to go really well. It's just going to go really well. I've done it, but that's not the same as working for like a program where you have people with a lot of trauma because they were, you know, you're at a, like a halfway house where people are running away from their abusive husbands. And, you know, so that's where like this is coming from. Like, if you're going to land here, like you could use this, but you might actually use this, but I don't think you're going to go into the whole chakra system. But it's not a comment on the system itself as a practice.
Thank you so much for making it to the end of this episode. Please subscribe, rate, and review our show and help us share yoga therapy with more people around the world. If you think this episode will help someone you know, feel free to share it with them. If you love yoga therapy and meditation, you can follow us over on Instagram at Breathing Deeply Yoga, where we share anything and everything to help you advance your understanding of yoga therapy and meditation. For more information about our yoga therapy and meditation trainings and programs, visit breathingdeeply.com. See you in the next episode.